Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today's day 18 of the Season of the Witch, and today we're going to go back in time and talk about horror in the 1970s. The 1970s gave us a proliferation of horror in general, and much like in the 60s, we start seeing this, not necessarily this divide, but we continue to see that horror comes from all places. We start to see more comedic horror, we start to see more highbrow horror, more lowbrow horror, and every shade in between. Some of the greatest horror movies ever came out in the 70s, movies including Halloween, Alien, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, The Exorcist, The Omen, Suspiria, and other movies like Deep Red as well. One of the great things about horror in the 70s is that we really start to see the importance of horror from other countries kind of come back or continue, you know. As I said, in the 60s, we really got this more international horror, and that continues, and specifically out of places like England and and Italy, but also from other parts of the world. The great thing about horror in the 70s as well is that we get people really pushing boundaries to the point that some horror films or horror-adjacent films end up getting banned for the longest time, a trend that actually continues in the 80s when the floodgates really burst open and we just have all sorts of horror. But horror in the 70s, it's hard to kind of distill into certain movies. I think this proliferation of just a lot of different types of horror is wonderful. It really is varied, and we really get to see just different takes on things. And some of the best horror movies, as I said, even though I've talked about stuff like The Exorcist and Alien and some of Argento's work, there's still plenty of horror to go around with. And some of these movies have been controversial and continue to be controversial. And chief among them, I think, is Ken Russell's The Devils from 1971, a historical drama about 17th century France and Cardinal Richelieu trying to take over, to get more power, to really be the most powerful man in the country. And using the hysteria of the times and taking advantage of, you know, what was going on historically. The Devils itself is one of the most banned movies, was like literally banned in parts of the world up until like last decade, and or into the 2000s at least, and one of the most censored movies for the longest time. Like in America, here in the US for the longest time, you couldn't see the, like you had to find a European version, a European cut if you wanted to see the original cut of the movie, because Warner Brothers cut it to shit. But that probably has to do a lot with the violence, the sexuality, and the intermix of both, along with the religious bit of everything that goes on in this movie. This movie is pretty insane, and I can see why it was cut up as much as it was. Oliver Reed and Vanessa Redgrave are the main characters of this movie, and Oliver Reed plays a priest, Urban Grandier, who is the target of Cardinal Richelieu in the movie, and he uses Sister Jean, who is the headmistress of a nunnery, in order to kind of get his Grandier out of power, and in order to take over. And this movie's just pretty out there. I mean, there's people talk about like torture porn like it's a new thing, but there's some really protected like torture sequences in this movie, and there's just this interplay of sex and violence, which isn't necessarily new, but I think there's something about just the continuousness of it in this particular movie, in doing it in a way where I guess people would find it blasphemous. I mean, there's dream sequences of Oliver Reed as Jesus Christ coming off of the cross and basically having lurid sex with Vanessa Redgrave. There's just a lot of repressed sexuality and kind of what that leads to. And The Devils is just, it's high class horror, because, you know, it really is going for it. And it's, I think, one of the examples of the risks that were being taken just overall and in general in the 70s, and just showing what people were willing to do. And speaking of risks, and speaking of just kind of going for it, David Lynch's Eraserhead is a movie that it's hard to describe, really, much like all of David Lynch's movies. And I realize I haven't really talked at all about David Lynch, but that's mostly due to my own ignorance of his work. I mean, aside from Eraserhead, I think I've seen maybe 20 minutes of Blue Velvet and, like, Mulholland Drive, and that's about it, really. This Eraserhead revolves around Henry Spencer, who is a factory worker who has a deformed baby that basically looks like a mutated bird thing. It's weird, and there's a lot of dream logic in this movie. It much like in all of David Lynch's movies, things that are hard to describe, really, and visually striking and just fucking gonzo and weird and out there. And I think, you know, the 70s are kind of a time where people are just able to kind of do insane stuff like that. I mean, I can't think of any other time outside of the 70s where we could get a movie like Goodbye, Uncle Tom, which is a mockumentary in which a modern-day film crew goes back to the antebellum South and documents the atrocities of slavery and the slave trade and what people go through. And, I mean, just the idea of it alone is insane, and that would be part of a series of movies, which were, like, called Mondo documentaries, which were the work of a couple of directors, but Jacopetti and Prosperi. But, you know, I think something like Eraserhead also really kind of just shows what directors were willing to go for when it came to horror movies and when it came to coming up with these almost insane ideas, or ideas that are just so out there that you wouldn't necessarily think to go that way. And it leads to this whole new take on what exactly horror is. I mean, we're no longer in the realm of just straight up monsters or serial killers or mad scientists. We're dealing with just some heady shit here. And yeah, like, Lynch, his work is just, it's just out there. And it's, like I mentioned, it's hard to describe, but I think it's important because we need to be challenged, and something like that is definitely, you know, challenging. As I mentioned, you know, Italian horror really kind of came into the fold in the 70s. I've talked about Dario Argento and Mario Bava, and I've talked about Lucio Fulci as well, but I think one of the best Lucio Fulci movies is Don't Torture a Duckling, which is a fucking crazy title, but it's kind of par for the course when it comes to a lot of Italian horrors, especially giallos. Not that this is a giallo, but this is just more of this crazy story about children being killed in a small town with people that are very superstitious and do not trust outsiders. This movie isn't maybe as necessarily as violent or gory as some of Fulci's other works, but I think that when we're talking about people killing children, you know, a lot of people aren't going to necessarily be, they're not going to be open to that, not going to want to see that. And it just kind of goes back to this whole idea of just pushing things to more extremes, and something that we're going to see just continue. And this movie also has, like, because of you know, these children being murdered, like, one of the characters, a local woman who is basically just Masiara, who is believed to be the person responsible, just ends up getting like murdered by the villagers themselves, and it leads other people to kind of come try to investigate. And this is another movie wherein they also start kind of pushing the like, what can you show in a movie, not just in the violence but in like nudity and sex and those sort of things. And Italian movie standards are definitely different from American ones. I don't think there would necessarily be an American made movie where you would have an extended sequence of a young boy basically trying to stare slash not stare at a naked woman. I think just Fulci just always ends up doing these interesting things with his movies and ends up taking on these interesting subjects and presenting them in a way that, a lot of the movies from the 70s, the effects don't necessarily hold up. But, you know, if you're able to get past that, which I am very easily able to do that, but I realize, you know, that can take people out of it when someone gets cut and there's very obvious fake blood spurting out. But those are the kind of things that you're going to just have to deal with when you're watching older movies. And, you know, it shouldn't necessarily take you, it can't take you out of it, but like, don't let that kind of hold you back from trying to check out something that may be shocking or that may be something that you're not necessarily used to seeing. And just in general, like, Fulci, I think, is a good example of Italian horror. But as I mentioned, you know, Italy wasn't the only part of Europe that had a lot of great horror movies coming out. Like I mentioned, The Devils earlier, and that's a British production, and probably one of the best British horror movies of the 70s is The Wicker Man. The Wicker Man, which was remade with Nicolas Cage in the 2000s, and you know, you don't really need to see that one. You can just go with the original. The story is very much the same in those two movies, but basically this story revolves around a police officer who goes to a small island, a small Scottish island, in order to look for a missing girl. And some of the people on the island include Christopher Lee and Ingrid Pitt, who are other people that we see plenty of times in horror movies. We also get Britt Eklund in this, and I can't remember her name, but one of the first Bond girls was also in this movie. This is another movie that kind of talks about sexual repression, specifically having to do with you know, Sergeant Howie, who is the police officer who comes to investigate and find this missing girl, who, when he gets there, everyone is basically stating that she doesn't exist. As he finds out more about the people on this island, he realizes that they're pagans, and we really get a good sense in this movie of what kind of rural horror is. God, that's rural, R-U-R-A-L, horror. And, you know, something like Midsommar, right? Midsommar, that came out in 2019, is a good example of a more modern example of that. But as Sergeant Howie is trying to figure out what's going on here, he realizes that everyone is basically against him, and these pagans need him there as a sacrifice to their, as part of their summer solstice festival. They need him there. He's been enticed to be there in order for him to be part of their Wicker Man, he's going to be basically their blood sacrifice to ensure the harvest. And this movie's great. It's out there, and I think it's one of those movies that, because of the rural nature of the Scottish Isle that looks idyllic, to then juxtapose that with everyone willing to kill this man in order to continue their ways is really insane. And it actually led to a pretty cool South Park episode as well, where they basically play off of this whole idea of, well, not idea, but they play off of everything that was going on with Britney Spears and her kind of having a mental breakdown in public, and how that is like the sacrifice in order to have a good harvest. Not necessarily one-to-one, but very much inspired by, I think, what is going on in The Wicker Man. And as I mentioned, this was remade with Nicolas Cage, and that movie is not good. You don't need to watch that. last time that I was talking about the 60s, I had mentioned Peeping Tom as kind of a proto-slasher along with Psycho. And probably the movie that is also, that may technically be the first slasher, or the one that, the last pro slasher right before something like Halloween, is Black Christmas, directed by Bob Clark and starring Margot Kidder from Indiana Jones fame, and John Saxon from plenty of movies. But when you're talking about horror, you know, he was in Nightmare on Elm Street. But Black Christmas is basically about a group of sorority girls who are stalked by this killer during their Christmas break on campus, and there is all this idea of no one really believing them, and them being stalked in their home more than anything, and a lot of what we would end up seeing in slashers in general, even in Halloween to a certain extent, can be seen in Black Christmas from 1974. Black Christmas is also one of those movies that just continues to get remade very unsuccessfully at times. I know there was like the I want to say it was like 2003 remake, which was terrible, and last year there was another remake of it that really kind of was working off of this idea of men trying to kill women because of women getting more rights. It's a little muddy, but that one was at least fun. But Black Christmas, the original, is it's pretty great. And as far as slashers go, or proto slashers, it's got it all there. You know, it's definitely, it's a slasher in everything but name, I feel like. And I think it really kind of showed what was to come. And this is one of those movies that really kind of spends more time with us getting to know the characters, and we really get to understand and really get to feel when people are killed, because they're not just like these nameless women who are just running around, running away from somebody. And Black Christmas is it's a good primer for slashers if you're not really familiar with slashers. And I mean, if you're going to watch a slasher, I would say probably start with like Halloween. But if you want to watch something along those lines that maybe isn't all there yet, or that's kind of showing the seeds of that, or if you've seen a lot of slashers and you just kind of want to see more of the roots of it, then Black Christmas is definitely worth checking out. You know, the 70s was also the heyday of Wes Craven with movies like Last House on the Left, and also The Hills Have Eyes, which is maybe as insane as The Hills Have, as Last House on the Left, but definitely not as depraved. In The Hills Have Eyes, you basically have this group, this family that ends up getting attacked by these violent savages out in the desert. And just like every Wes Craven movie, I mean, the premise of it is pretty straightforward, but the execution of it is always really great and really entertaining at the end of the day. And The Hills Have Eyes, it may not necessarily be the best Wes Craven movie, but I think it's definitely one worth checking out. And like, I just, in general, I just think Wes Craven movies are always interesting. Even his lesser movies, the ones that aren't as good, I think at least have interesting ideas in them. And The Hills Have Eyes is one that, in a way, has also been very influential just from what it was done. And The Hills Have Eyes was remade, another movie that was remade in the 2000s. And I mean, all I can say about that one is, if you ever wanted to see Ted Levine's head get blown off completely with a shotgun, I guess you could watch the remake. But barring that, you really should just check out the original. As I mentioned, you know, international horror coming back in or continuing to be more of a thing in the 70s, we also have Patrick coming from Australia, which I want to say is probably the first Australian horror movie that I've talked about. Not the first Australian movie, but I'm pretty sure it's the first horror movie from Australia that I've talked about. And Patrick is about a comatose man in a hospital who is able to kill people with his powers of telekinesis. Patrick is basically obsessed with one of his nurses, and whenever he's moved, like, she starts to believe that she can communicate with him, and strange things start happening in the time that she's with him, and he slowly starts to become kind of obsessed with her, which is quite the feat for a man that literally comatose and can't move in his bedridden in a hospital, but it happens. Patrick is one of those movies that I kind of just caught randomly on a streaming service, and it was just fascinating because it was so out there, and I don't know, man, this movie is just weird, and I just like weird things sometimes, especially in horror movies. And you know, I can't think of very many movies where there's a guy in a bed who's able to kill people without actually doing anything except using the power of his own mind. Patrick is out there, and it's, you know, if you come across it, I would say check it out, just because it's definitely something. But as I mentioned, in the 70s, we get all these different things, and we get all these different sort of kind of almost controversies with certain movies from the 70s. And I think one to kind of finish on, just talking about horror in the 70s, a good one to kind of end on is Don't Look Now, a movie that has a couple of claims to fame. Apparently there is like a literal sex scene between Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland in this movie, who play a married couple. And I want to say they were a couple at the time, but as it goes, like, the sex scenes that are in this movie are actual sex scenes of them copulating, and whatever, but I mean, some people are, you know, clutching their pearls, like, oh, you can't do that in a movie, sort of thing. And because in most movies, the majority of movies, sex scenes aren't actually real, it's acting, you know. But Don't Look Now also is interesting in that it really kind of plays with structure of film and in how it presents things out of order, and even within like literal scenes, there's stuff out of order, and it almost works in a way where it can be disorienting, but it ends up also working where you can kind of get to see these themes. The movie really revolves around this married couple who, after the death of their daughter, encounter these two sisters who, one of them being psychic, is trying to warn them about dangerous situations that they're going to be running into. But Donald Sutherland, you know, being the actual target and being a skeptic about all that, ends up not listening to them. And the movie is kind of just like almost this inevitability that this is going to happen. But because of the way that it's presented and the way that it presents things out of order, it really makes for this interesting thing to watch, this interesting movie to watch. And, you know, Sutherland is just great in this. Everyone does a wonderful job. And it's another example, I think, where we really see what other things can be done in horror in general. And, you know, the 70s in general just always had, not always, but they went through these ups and downs of creativity. And like, horror itself kind of had this peak in the early 70s, then kind of dipped in the mid 70s, and then kind of peaked again in the late 70s, leading, of course, into the 80s. But looking back on it, you know, the 70s just kind of show this proliferation, this continued proliferation of horror that just kind of continues for the next decade. And we have a lot of great movies to look back on it because of it, and a lot that was inspired yet to come because of these movies in the 70s. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow.